Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Conversations with me, your host, Scott Drummond. It's January. That means the topic I'm still exploring is courage. And today, helping me to explore that topic in this conversation is Tom. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know Tom over the last 6 months. So welcome. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Really, really good. It's I can't believe we're this deep into January, actually. I've started booking things in for next week and realized, shit, next week's February. So that's really triggering in me thoughts about what next month's topic is going to be. And at the same time, I'm just holding that at arm's length so that we can get this deep dive into courage today.
Yeah, sounds good. And I think, the month is going fast, but the topic of today's chat is something that we can give some time to. And really looking forward to exploring it and seeing where we end up.
Lovely, mate. Yeah, and it just struck me as well, right? You know, the topic of courage is sort of evergreen, right? It's not like at the end of January, suddenly, courage is off the agenda. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not practicing it. I'm not reading about it. I'm not having conversations around it. I mean, it carries on. For me, I did this process of end of year reflection and then looking forward at what I wanted to do. A close friend of mine, Johnny Miller, brilliant guy, created this reflecting forward template, really helpful. And I kind of explored that template. And out of that came this real interest in this word courage. You know, I want more of it in my life. I'm pursuing more of it. And in this practice, throughout the month of January, I'm just going for a deep dive on that idea of courage. So I'm really glad to have you here. Each new perspective is sort of fascinating. A great place for us to start, as I've started with a few other callers, is like, what's your first memory of courage? Do you have an earliest memory of courage?
Oh, it's a good question. I'd say for me, courage, earliest memory would be probably in a sporting environment. I played a lot of football growing up. I was always quite small as a kid, so I was a lot smaller than other players on the pitch, which meant I had to build up the courage and confidence to get physical with players and kids that were much bigger than me, much faster than me, and much more athletic than me. And so I'd say it was courage. I had to build up something that gave me the belief that size didn't matter on a football pitch. Yeah. And I had to explore new ways of improving. I'm also one of five siblings. So I've got three brothers and a sister who are all taller than me. So naturally I had to fight for my place. Growing up as kids, I was always the smallest. I was always getting picked on. So I think, growing up, courage was part of being competitive, having to really earn my place in a sports team or at home.
Being the smallest, whether it's on the pitch or in the family, you're already kind of in a place of potentially discomfort, right? You're having to work a little bit harder to assert yourself in that environment. So you're having to step into some discomfort in doing that potentially.
Sure, exactly. And that's I mean, whether it was courage or whether it was just being competitive, I think they're quite linked in what they are. I think if I think back to early days, courage to go into a slide tackle with someone that's 2 foot bigger than you, I think that takes courage. and really just pushing yourself. And I think in sports there's always opportunity for getting out your comfort zone and challenging yourself. Definitely growing up, sports was probably the main area that I could say I was exploring courage back then. More recently, that's changed into other aspects and parts of my life. But
before we move on to those other aspects, I'm still curious. It strikes me then that sport is a great kind of a laboratory of sorts to practice courage. It's a space where you're given multiple opportunities within what is ostensibly quite a safe environment. You know, there's rules, there's ways in which we engage each other in football. You're not throwing punches or kicks or anything else necessarily. So there's a kind of code of conduct. And within that framework, there are, you know, and let's call it the framework and a time limit, right? There's a 90-minute time limit on a football match. Within that, you know, the boundaries of that pitch and the rules that are there, and within that time frame, that 90-minute time frame, there are multiple opportunities to be courageous. So it strikes me that sport is actually a fantastic environment to practice this. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I'd say I've played hundreds of football games since, you know, I was about 5 years old. And there are games where you're scared. You know, you don't want to commit to a tackle. You don't want to go up for a header. You don't want to make a mistake. You know, you're scared of the failure of, oh, if I do this, they'll score, or, oh, if I don't do that.
Right.
So it's 90 minutes of fear, but also opportunity, because there's games that I look back on where I was courageous and I did score the winning goal and I did make the header and I did stop them scoring. And it's within that 90 minutes, you're right, you've got opportunity everywhere to be courageous or not. And that's when, you know, after 90 minutes, you look back at the game and you think, oh, why was I scared? You know, and it really, you know, subconsciously, you're not even thinking about these things because you're playing football. But
of course, yeah. If you were sat on the pitch thinking about whether this is a courage experiment or not, you'd be a lousy footballer for a start.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it can be broken down. I think, you know, courage, yeah, it's having the, yeah, it being committed to making the tackle or going for the header. And it's as simple as that. But there's so many times when you don't do it because you're either you're scared or you don't know how to do it, or you have the pressure of your dad or your family watching on the sidelines, you've got coaches shouting at you, you've got other players that are frustrated, and it's, you know, you've got this pressure building up where you've either got to do it or you don't.
And there's a couple of really, really cool points I want to pick up on what you said there, which is one I really like, which is you talked about, you know, having the courage to go in for that tackle or to go up for that header, you know, and then the kind of feeling, you know, the positive feeling of scoring the winning goal or having a great match, right? And so there's these elements that we're kind of talking about. One part of courage is definitely fear, right? Then there's this kind of risk element. So I'm you know, there's a risk of, in this case, bodily harm or also a risk of, like, failure, right? And it's interesting, right, you know, whether after the fact, like, as we're sitting there at the end of the game, if we've practiced lots of courage and it just so happens that one of those occasions that we practiced courage, we did score the winning goal, right? I wonder if we're more likely in that scenario to consider courage to be a really positive thing than in a scenario where you've been courageous in all sorts of moments across the pitch, right? But you didn't score the winning goal. And in fact, your team got thrashed. And so you're coming out of that experience having had this tremendous practice of courage and, you know, putting your body on the line, committing yourself to those challenges, you know, taking the risk and acting in the face of your fear, but you don't get the positive kind of feedback loop of that, of winning the game. Do you think, you know, have you experienced both, and what do you think maybe the difference is there?
I have experienced both, and not just on a football pitch, but in other sporting situations. And, you know, getting the end result, scoring the goal or you know, winning the game is great. But to be honest, finishing the game and looking back and being able to say I was fully committed. You know, win, lose or draw, I gave it everything. And that's, you know, that's equally as important as, well, if not more, because sometimes you can commit and sometimes you can be courageous and you don't get what you want. And that's okay. But if after 90 minutes you haven't committed, you haven't been courageous, you know, you might even win the game because football's, you know, a game of 11 players. So it doesn't always need you to be courageous, but that, you know, that's, it doesn't matter. I think if you get the result, great. But if you can look back after 90 minutes and say, well, do you know what? I gave it my all and that's all that matters, because that's what builds confidence. I think if you know that you've done everything you can to have an impact on the game, then the result kind of doesn't matter. And I think that's a lot. You can build confidence that way without kind of setting expectation of the outcome.
And what, you know, you've provided me with this beautiful segue as well here, Tom, because the other point I wanted to bring up was around differentiated courage. It's really all it means is that we have different levels of courage depending on where we are. So we might have a huge amount of courage on the football field, but we might lack courage, for example, in our conversations with our boss. Right? They're different environments. And so it's not always the case that a courageous person in one environment exhibits that same level of courage in another. And, you know, what you've just been talking about, and I think you're starting to move in the direction of, is this kind of broader idea that when you've given your all, you know, and you've been fully invested in the process, it doesn't really matter about the outcome. And that strikes me as something that's bigger than just sport, right? We're no longer just talking about sport. We're talking about in each environment of our life, if we approach it in that way, where we give our all, you know, we commit, we show courage, that is a kind of a way for us to commit almost, then in a sense, that's enough. You know, that process above output, you know, about above end point, strikes me as a broader topic, not just about sport.
Absolutely. And, you know, from my experience, the answer to your first question was, you know, what was my early experience of courage? And that was in a sporting environment. And it doesn't easily transition over to other parts of your life like you mentioned, work or relationships, or, you know, general well-being. So, you know, having the sporting element growing up was natural for me because I played a lot of sport. But I've almost had to relearn how to use the courage I explored when I was a kid as an adult, because I think courage is, it's built on confidence. I guess if you play football from the age of four, you're going to have confidence because you're good at it. But when you go into a working environment, which is something that you haven't been doing since the age of four, it takes time to build up that confidence and build up that courage. What I found is once you get to a stage where you have the belief and you start to build the courage, it's very similar. You know, you have to get out your comfort zone and challenge yourself. And exactly that. It doesn't matter at work if you win the project or you get the promotion. If you've applied the courage and commitment to it, then it's the same. It's the same outcome.
I love that, and I love that you mentioned this difference between having courage in one area, and in the case that you mentioned, it's at one time in your life, right? Having courage as a kid, and then how that courage translates to new situations, new scenarios. And it occurs to me, you know, how do we learn? You know, how do we learn this way to be courageous as an adult? I'm thinking of the difficult conversations I wasn't having when I first entered the workplace, because I didn't know how to have them. You know, I probably had, I had fear, definitely was present. And I was searching for a way to assert myself probably in an environment where I was quite junior. And so it's interesting, right? How we are kind of, how we're initiated into this kind of world of adult courage, you know, how we bring the courage that we have as children that we might have exhibited in sport or academic excellence or whatever environment we had where confidence was present and we felt, you know, courageous and we had an opportunity to practice courage. How do we kind of bring that with us to, as an adult? That strikes me as a really interesting question to explore.
Well, from my experience, it gets harder as you get older, because when you're a kid, I don't think you have the fear. I mean, you do. You have the fear of, am I going to be any good? But you don't have the same fears of failure that you get as you get older. I mean, I used to skateboard as a kid, and I chucked myself off massive steps and grind down handrails. I wouldn't dream of doing that now, out of pure fear of hurting myself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that naive approach when you're a kid of taking on new challenges, and I think as you get older, you don't do that as much, and so it's harder to build the confidence and the courage to take on new challenges, because you're more kind of aware of what might go wrong. Whereas when you're a kid,
right,
I don't think you think about that so much.
I really like this. You know, it's a few things pop up for me. You know, you get out of practice, number one, right? And, you know, like any, you know, we used sport earlier as an analogy. If you don't practice, you know, I know you're a keen golfer. If you don't practice for a while, you don't play for a while, your golf gets rusty, right? I mean, the mechanics are there, the basics are there, but you've got to get that rhythm back. And, you know, it also strikes me that as we grow up, let's call it that, as we become adults, you know, we're more aware perhaps of our mortality. You know, really, we're talking about having more fear. Perhaps we have more at stake, and that's why we're more risk averse. We don't want to lose what we already have. That's a heuristic bias that we have as humans, is this loss aversion, is that we don't want to lose what we already have. But yeah, I mean, it strikes me that that's an invitation for us to be a bit more diligent with our practice. Like, how do we continue to take ourselves outside of our comfort zone so that we don't get rusty with our confidence and with our courage?
Yeah, and I think part of it, maybe in the world today, is the everyone lives at such a fast pace, and a lot of habits or a lot of hobbies or a lot of new things that you want to learn take time, and it takes resilience, and it takes commitment more than anything. If you want to be a professional golfer, or at least get to a very good level, you have to put in the training. And I think as you get older, you realize that, where is my time best spent, and can I afford to really commit the time to being 100% in what I'm doing? And what I've noticed in my life is there's so many opportunities to explore new things that it becomes difficult to commit to just one area of your life. And you know, certainly in the last few years, I found that I'm okay at quite a lot of things that I enjoy, but if I really want to be a very good level at something, it requires maybe dropping certain things in my life to be committed. So I think that's where, yeah, there's so much opportunity now that it makes it difficult to be courageous in one particular adventure.
Yeah. And listen, everything that you just said resonates, right? You know, this feeling of like, what am I missing out on? The novelty factor, you know, the speed with which new things enter our lives these days is sort of mind-boggling. And they're, you know, they're designed to be engaging, you know, immersive, exciting. And so I think our attention is pulled, you know, it's not a new thesis to say our attention is pulled in all these different directions. And you know, for me, speaks to the real importance of, you know, being able to say yes to things, and at the same time understand when you say yes, what you need to say no to make space for that yes, and vice versa, mm-hmm. right? So this brings us to this kind of territory of, you know, I guess having the courage, to some extent, to say no, you know, to set your boundaries in such a way that you prioritize time on the things you really want to do. You know, I've had this experience in my life at different times of, you know, I'm a relentlessly curious person. I'm fascinated by all sorts of things. I had a mantra for a long time, which was, there's no such thing as a boring subject, only a disinterested person. And while that's true, time is not infinite. And so how we apportion our time is really, really important. And I've felt that, you know, I've had that experience of, you know, overcommitting to many things and not being able to deliver on the things that really mattered. And so, yeah, I think as I've gotten older, my focus has become more and more on what are the things that I do that, you know, light me up the most, that make me the most excited, that bring me to life. And where can I find, you know, crossover? So if I go for a swim in the sea, I check a box that is like fit and healthy. There's a kind of stimulation of my nervous system that's like good for mood and things like that. There's an almost spiritual thing going on as you kind of lie in the sea on your back. You feel very small and insignificant in the grand scheme of things. There's a sort of perspective setting. It's quick. It's cheap. It's readily available. So for me, it's, you know, I'm not trying to advocate that everyone needs to go swimming. But what it is it ticks a lot of boxes for me. It covers a lot of different bases. And as time becomes more and more kind of precious, a resource, it becomes really important to become intentional about how we spend it. And that takes courage, actually. It takes courage to say all this stuff that which I find fascinating and amazing, I'm going to say no to. You know, there's a discomfort in that, right? When your default way of operating is insatiable curiosity, it's uncomfortable to say, I'm not going to pursue that, you know. And, you know, there is that fear of missing out. Oh, what am I going to miss out on? You know, look at them over there. They're all learning about this, or they're developing this new skill, you know, and I'm over here missing out because I'm, you know, plugging away at this thing. So I think, you know, it's not what we would traditionally think of as a courageous thing to do. But I think, you know, as a coach, one of the things I definitely notice across a lot of the people that I work with is focus at one point becomes really important. You know, turning our attention really kind of generously to what do we want in our life and what do we need to do to get it. And that's about courage, you know, to block out the things that are distracting us. It's about commitment to the things that are the most high value and that activate that part of us that helps us feel fulfilled, alive, engaged, you know. So I see that, actually. I see that this there's this deep importance to being able to say no at the same time as a yes, or to understand at least that every yes probably requires some no's and vice versa.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask Scott, would you say that the reason you do decide to get in the sea is in a way you exploring courage on a regular basis to almost build it into your daily routine, or maybe not daily, but would you say that courage can be learned if you implement a system where you do put yourself out your comfort zone on a regular basis?
I actually feel like that is what courage is, in fact. I don't even think you have to learn it per se. I think that's just the way it works. So courage has been distinct from, let's say, bravery. So there's a few, I don't want to get too much into terminology, right? Because, you know, I think it can become a bit granular and a bit wordy. But just to kind of draw a distinction, I see courage as you choose courage in the moment as a result of, like, the factors around you. So your experience, your level of risk tolerance, your desire to confront fear, right? You find yourself in a situation. So in that situation, you have fear present or some other heightened emotion, right? I don't think it has to be fear. It can be, you know, it could be anger, right? There's a kind of courage that comes from a place of anger too. But we most commonly know fear as the inciting emotion that requires courage. So let's say you're experiencing fear. In that moment, you choose courage, right? Now, if you choose courage a lot, you basically grow bravery. Bravery is not something you choose. I don't choose to be brave. I choose courage. Bravery is something I develop as a result of choosing lots of courage, because bravery is almost lowers the amount of fear we feel. So to give you an example, right, a specific example related to your question. The first time I decided to get into very cold water, that took actually, it's hilarious to say it out loud, because there are people out there literally risking life and limb every day, right? But what I know from my research around courage is relative, right? And it's not that easy to compare one person's courage to another. They aren't simply on the same level. It's kind of an apples and oranges thing. So the first time I had to get into cold water, it took courage, because there was anticipation of a negative experience. There was discomfort when I got in the water, yeah, and a desire not to do it again, right? You know, all of the elements were there, but I'm choosing to kind of, in the face of that, to go forward and do it anyway. Now, over time, what happens, as you acclimate to the temperature of the water, the experience, and you learn techniques to support you as you go into the water, like, you know, returning to your breath, maybe practicing breath work even before you get into the water, courage becomes less necessary because there's less fear there. Suddenly you've become braver. In fact, it's quite funny to, you know, I often hear people as we're like, you know, myself and, you know, friends, if they're coming with, or just me on my own, walking down the beach, you know, stripping off, getting ready to get into the water. I often hear people saying, like, you know, good luck sort of thing, looking at me. And the look on their face is like, they're mad. You know, why would they go for a swim in the cold water in February? That's January, February. That's crazy, right? And in truth, for them, it's bringing up a fear or anxiety or, you know, that feels uncomfortable. I wouldn't do that. But I'm not having the same experience as them, because at this point, it isn't that uncomfortable for me to get in the water. So there isn't an anticipation of a negative experience. In fact, I'm looking forward to it. So in answer to your question, like, it was a courage practice when I was first getting in. The first few times when I was getting in, when the sea was a bit bigger, or, you know, whatever the environment, you know, change was that felt new and a bit more fearful. But now it's not so much that. And you might say I've developed a sense, a kind of bravery around it, which I don't feel the fear anymore. So I don't require courage. I don't have to choose courage now to get in the water, because there is no fear present. And so what I think is really interesting about that, the implication of that is, and I actually think it's a really fun implication. I just want to say that. But the implication is we have to create, or we get to create, new courage practices all the time, because our tolerance risk and fear increases the more courage we show. So because I'm practicing courage to get in the water, eventually I no longer need it to get in the water. So what's next, right? I'm not trying to say that we have to keep leveling up or anything like that, but suddenly my boundary for comfort has extended a little bit further, and now I can, you know, step into being courageous in a different environment. Maybe courage, the next courageous thing to do is to bring other people into the water, right? Because now it's not just about my experience, it's about curating a better experience for other people. So So yeah, I would say, you know, absolutely. In the first instance, it felt like courage to do these things, and now I'm actively looking for opportunities to design little courage experiments that are new. You know, one that's on the horizon, which is kind of a funny one, I guess. But I'll share it here because it might make you laugh as well. Is going to a nudist beach and stripping off and going for a swim naked. And then, you know, why does that feel like a courage experiment? Well, it's nervous, right? I've got a little bit of anxiety about it. Like everybody, you know, I have some discomfort around my body and what it looks like. I'm mostly happy in my own skin, but there's a gap between being mostly happy in your own skin and deciding to show it to everybody or to more people. So that for me is not about, you know, exhibitionism or about, you know, meeting a particular need inside me that I have to do that. It's actually just a curious, I'm like curious about it. I'm like, okay, there's a bit of fear about that. There's a bit of like nervousness or, you know, anxiety about what that will be like and how I will feel. So to explore it, I'm going to create a little experiment around it, you know. So I actually thought about doing it recently and then thought, well, there's going to be nobody down at the nudist beach in January. So I think I might have to wait with that one maybe until it's a bit busier. But yeah, that, you know, I'm actively always thinking about at the moment, what are these little experiments I can design? And, you know, everyone has a different comfort zone. And so everyone's experiment is whatever is going to take you just outside of that comfort zone in a way that you feel is a stretch, but is not going to take you further than your comfort zone and further than, you know, what psychologists have called the optimal performance zone, which is just outside of your comfort zone. That's where you want to be, right? Slightly uncomfortable, a bit stretched outside of your comfort zone, but still kind of psychologically pretty safe. If you go too far outside your comfort zone, you enter what psychologists call the danger zone. Right, in that environment, then you're risking kind of psychological, physical harm, which could trigger trauma, you know, and it, you know, that's not recommended. So I just want to be really clear to anybody listening or listening back to this in the future. You know, this is not a kind of, hey, everybody, go out and leap bravely outside your comfort zone. It's about really getting to know where your comfort zone is, exploring that, right, really leaning into where do I feel uncomfortable, where is my fear, where is my anxiety, and then thinking about like, okay, what would 1% step over that boundary look like? You know, practice 1% to begin with, you know, if that feels safe. And then if you do that, you start to open up the space to practice 2% and 5%. You know, this is not work everyone has to do, by the way, but this is work that I'm choosing to do at the moment. Yeah, these little courage experiments are my way of opening up new experiences for me. What I'm curious, what's a courage experiment that you could design for yourself? You know, where's a comfort zone? Where's the edge of a comfort zone? Yeah, and it could be in any environment, right? I know that you're a really keen golfer, for example, right? Mm. What would take you outside of your golfing comfort zone?
It's a good question. There's lots of golf's very complex in that there's no real right or wrong way to do it. So what would take me out of my comfort zone with golf is not striving for perfection, because the reality is, if you strive for perfection, it's not achievable. And if you're always looking for perfection, you're not enjoying getting there. So for me, golf in the last 12 months, and this might be, you know, linked to my shift in mindset and kind of awareness of being present, is just accepting that it's okay to not be perfect on every shot. It's okay to miss a shot. I mean, the reality is, you can hit a ball perfectly, but you can't control how it lands on the ground. I mean, that's
right.
If you could, you'd be a very, very wealthy and good golfer. But I mean, it's just yeah, I think it's that accepting that there are things that I can do. There are you know, practices, there are training drills that I can do. And if I want to get better, I know I can get better, but it's committing the time and putting myself out of my comfort zone, which would be spending 2 hours probably in the morning stretching and 2 hours in the evening rehearsing certain swing techniques. And
yeah,
so I think, yeah, it's a good question. I think courage on the golf course is really about mind control. It's less physical. I mean, you can create a textbook golf swing, but if your mind isn't in the right place, then that really doesn't matter. So for me, part of what I'm trying to achieve at golf is being mentally present and making the right decisions. So that's part of, I mean, to be honest, that's part of what I'm doing in a lot of parts of my life at the moment. It's really considering what the right decision is and why. Scott, there's one point I wanted to kind of go back to, and it's to do with maybe why people aren't as courageous, or what stops people getting out their comfort zone. And for me, what I've experienced is there's a lot of different things that you can do in society, but also you have social media. There's a lot of things that take your attention. And there's also the comfort zone of being comfortable. I mean, if I think about where I live and the lifestyle that I now have, yes, we're in lockdown, but I don't need to leave the house. I can have food delivered to my house that's cooked. I can have drones drop off electronic devices that I want to buy within 24 hours.
Yeah,
I can watch anything on TV. I can learn anything on YouTube. You know, these are all things that kind of make it comfortable for me to not get out my comfort zone. So it's kind of, I think it's almost gone the other way, in that it's one thing being courageous, but now there's all of these new kind of factors in place that are almost preventing you from trying or putting yourself out there. And that's kind of what I'm starting to realize, is that you have to actively put yourself out there. You have to actively get out your comfort zone. And that does require switching off your phone, or it does require getting in the sea, because you have to get away from distractions. And if you can't focus and you can't be present, then it's hard to be courageous.
I love that. Yeah, and this idea that, you know, modern life is increasingly being designed to be comfortable. You know, not for everybody everywhere, but certainly, you know, living standards have increased. Convenience and comfort is what many brands design for. One thing I wanted to pick up on what you said, because this conversation has been quite filled up with ideas of getting out of your comfort zone, right? And the benefits of doing that. And I think that's really important. I think there are really great benefits to stepping, you know, carefully, thoughtfully, and mindfully, as you said, with presence of mind, stepping outside of your comfort zone. What I also just want to emphasize is, you know, it's called the comfort zone for a reason, right? It's a place where we feel safe. It's a place where we feel at ease, where we have low anxiety. This is a good thing. You know, we shouldn't make the comfort zone a bad thing, right? I think often in our, certainly in the world of coaching and in other environments, people can get quite hung up on this idea of getting out of the comfort zone, and like, you're not doing anything unless you're getting out of the comfort zone. And recently I've been just playing around with this this idea of, okay, what is the value of the comfort zone and what is the value of outside of the comfort zone? I think, you know, we go through periods in our development of rapid growth, right? You know, this happens biologically. You know, in adolescence, you know, we experience this enormous injection of hormones and our brains grow at an unprecedented rate, you know, but throughout our life in different ways, there are periods in our life where we're experiencing real like personal growth and development. And then there are other periods where we're not, you know. And I think that the truth is, it's wrong to fetishize like endless personal growth, like we would just continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. I think a necessary part of this model is, if you're experiencing a kind of profound sense of growth or self-development, physically, mentally, psychologically, spiritually, whatever it is, I think that has to be accompanied by a period of quiet reflection and contemplation, recuperation, right? And I think the comfort zone is exactly, you know, what that is. You know, it's a space where we can reflect safely without, you know, this urgency or this need to grow on the experience of, you know, that we've been through. And so I think we need both, right? That's the point I want to kind of highlight. Like, the comfort zone is not to be demolished or triumphed over and forever banished. Instead, you know, we need to embrace the value of the comfort zone and embrace the value of, you know, stepping outside of it too, and just be aware, exactly to your point, where am I right now? Am I in my comfort zone? Great. Do I want to be here? Is it serving me? Is that valuable to me? Brilliant. You know, am I in my comfort zone and thinking like, wow, my life feels really boring and I don't have the things I want? You know, if that's your reflection and you're mindfully present for that, well, then what do you want to do? Maybe that's the catalyst for stepping outside of your comfort zone to create new growth in your life.
Exactly. And I think if we go back to golf, and maybe I'll give a different answer to the question you asked previously, but you know, the training and the practice and the new skills that you learn, that's kind of me out of my comfort zone. That's me
right,
pushing.
Right.
That's me really thinking, how can I get better? How can I improve? If I commit to this, will it result in anything?
Yeah.
When and then in golf, it's well known that you have to clear your head. And if when you get out on the course, if you're still thinking about the training that you've done, I shouldn't do this or I shouldn't do that, you're not going to hit a good shot. So when I'm out on the course, the idea is I'm in my comfort zone. I shouldn't even think about the training or being courageous or, you know, trying to get better, because it's not going to benefit me in that situation. So it's that balance of, there is a time to be courageous and there's a time to be pushing for growth and development, but sometimes to really see the benefit of it, and it's exactly how it works on the golf course, is you have to let go and you have to get into that comfort zone. And sometimes it's great, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but you can't be switched on all the time.
I that totally resonates with me, and it's backed up in the neurobiology literature as well. You know, we talk about neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to kind of change, rewire itself. What we now understand or know from the research is that change takes place during periods of rest, not during the periods of high arousal or engagement. So it's during our sleep, or it's during, you know, perhaps meditation, or, you know, time spent in a flotation tank, for example, these deep periods of rest, that's when the brain does the rewiring. So, you know, it's absolutely the case that we need both, right? We need that high level engagement, that striving energy, and we also need the kind of comfort zone energy, like retreating back into our comfort zone so we can process what we've been doing, make sense of it, you know, wire that into our habitual behavior as well. So it makes a lot of sense. I'm conscious of our time, Tom. I know that we've got a hard stop coming up in sort of 10, 15 minutes. What's feeling, you know, what area of your life right now is courage, you know, does the word courage resonate most within?
It's a good question. I think it's, for me, there are some difficult conversations that need to be had on a personal level. And it's kind of building the courage to have those conversations, but it's also building the awareness of what the outcome will be after those conversations, and also understanding why they're conversations that need to be had. So it's something that I'm conscious needs exploring, and it's not easy having difficult conversations with family or colleagues or but it's one thing knowing that you have to do it. It's also another thing doing it. But then it's kind of having the belief that it's the right thing to do. And I think when I think about my experience of courage, it's getting to a place where you just do it. And it's, you know, whether that's you pay for it or whether that's you get yourself motivated or whatever it may be. But for me, there's some difficult conversations that I need to have. You know, I'm preparing myself on how to have those conversations.
Great.
You know, I think life will be better for the people involved in those conversations should they take place. So it's that's part of my life outside of the golf course, outside of work, outside of marriage, that you know, I get a feeling that it needs some contribution, needs some time. But to do it, I need to be in a place where I'm courageous enough to go there.
I really want to kind of highlight that as well, which is, again, to say, like, I love this idea that, you know, getting to a place where you feel ready, right, ready to take action. It's not saying that I've got to have a courageous conversation, therefore I'm going to, you know, read about how to do that and then just have it. You know, it's a real understanding that there's important work to be done ahead of stepping into that conversation. And that work is, you know, is internal work for you. It's about, and I think I love what you described, which is, it's about projecting to a future where you can imagine the benefits of having done that work, you know, of having had that conversation, and therefore, you know, that giving you the motivation to lean into the difficult stuff that you need to do first, even to get ready, you know, to step into that difficult conversation. So that strikes me as just a really, you know, these conversations are rarely about like hacks or tips or tricks or things like that. They're a bit deeper than that. But that does strike me as a really great tool to help people if they know that there's something on their horizon that feels scary, difficult, uncomfortable, and they kind of feel like, but I know it's on my horizon. I know I'm going to have to encounter that. I love this orientation that says, I'm going to look at what do I stand to gain by going through that discomfort, by doing that difficult thing, that challenging or uncomfortable thing, and then really trying to get attached to that, you know, that benefit, that brilliant future that's going to come from exploring that difficult conversation in this case. So that strikes me as a really useful tool. Can you think of any other, I'm sure you mentioned that because it's something you've done before, right? So I'm curious, are there any other tools or methods that you've come across that help you to get ready as you're moving towards something that feels difficult or scary?
Yeah, it's obviously tools that I've picked up in coaching and reading books about personal development and growth and mindset, and there are various different tools, but I think a couple of practices that I found useful recently is breathing work, meditation. It's very easy to overthink things, and the more you overthink things, and it becomes harder to act. Because you're so caught up in, I need to do this, I need to do this, I need to do this. So for me the breath work and the yoga and the meditation was a way of kind of preparing myself mentally and physically to do what I needed to do. Because, you know, the reality is I go to work for 9 hours, I come home, I cook dinner, I spend time with my wife, and I don't have a lot of time to think about things that need action, because I'm so kind of caught up in what I'm doing. And then, but yeah, so I think the tools I've used are allowing myself time to really understand if I'm doing the right thing, and then preparing myself, whether that's getting enough sleep, whether that's having the right diet, whether that's giving up alcohol, giving myself and my body what it needs to really take action. So yeah, it's not a one size fits all, and my courage, and is, like you say, it would be different to others, but I found that there's certain things, there are tools that you can learn that make the action less scary.
And listen, so I'm a big advocate of any kind of practice that brings you into connection with yourself. So I know people, you know, for whom that's running or swimming. For me, it's definitely exercise helps. I love, you know, going for a run, getting in the sea. And I also know that the sort of slightly more contemplative or maybe more sedate practices like meditation, sometimes like breath work as well, and yoga, those really help. I just want to highlight as well, though, you know, I think, and you're a great example of this as well, Tom, there are things in our environment already that we can really work with that can have a massive effect on our ability to show up for ourselves in difficult circumstances. And you named a few, which kind of got, funnily enough, you know, yoga, meditation, you know, Wim Hof, cold water immersion, this stuff's all the rage, right? And people talk about it a lot in these regards, but they often overlook sleep, right? Or they often overlook proper hydration, you know, drinking enough water during the day. They overlook, you know, the importance of diet, you know, and what we're putting in our body. And I think, you know, you're a great example of a guy who's chosen to pursue a plant-based diet, you know, to cut alcohol out, you know, and you're, so I love this idea, you know, it's really about optimizing, and again, it's for you, right? It's not for everybody. It's not what everybody needs to do. It's not a prescription that everyone can just go and pick up from the pharmacy and then they'll have the same experience. But it's, you're identifying these ways of giving yourself what you need, so that you can show up in the ways you want to show up for yourself. So you mentioned a great example, you know, yoga, meditation, breathwork has given you a sense of space and time so that you can prepare yourself to have these difficult conversations and step into the more challenging parts of your life. And I also think how valuable it is to have these other kind of quite mundane everyday areas, really looking at those and saying, am I getting enough sleep? You know, sleep is a huge determinant of whether we can perform at our best. You know, whether that's on the football field, in work, or just, you know, how we're showing up emotionally for other people, right? So sleep, hydration, diet, you know, these are really, really big inputs that often, you know, they aren't as sexy for people to work on, right? You know, everyone wants to tell you about their latest resilience practice and about, you know, how much yoga they're doing and, you know, how deep their meditation this morning was, right? But it's not quite so exciting to talk about having drunk, you know, 4 liters of water today and feeling fantastic for it.
No, exactly. And that's why, like I said, it, you know, my approach will be different to others. But if I think back to decisions or what got me to where I'm at now is kind of almost looking at my life as if I was a doctor. You know, what am I doing that, you know, when a doctor diagnoses you, it's like, okay, what's your lifestyle? What are you consuming? What are you reading? How are you spending your time? And it was a real deep dive into alcohol. Is that good? Is that serving a purpose? And it was like, well, no, it's not. You know, eating this, is that serving? So for me, I kind of looked at it as a way of, it's easier to make big decisions when you haven't got so many to make. And that's kind of what my approach was, and it still is. And in various parts of my life, it's had a positive impact. So yeah, I found a method or a system that is working. But now it's finding the balance of, you know, sometimes I don't have to stick to it. Sometimes I can just not be so, I need to be focused on this. That's where I'm still learning and improving. It's okay to sit and watch TV and not be reading a book about behavior. So yeah, but there's definitely things that you can do straight away to start making things easier to make those decisions.
Yeah, and I love, you know, we've come to the end, and I just love that we've arrived at a place that is also about self-acceptance, right? It's like the courage to kind of to say that, you know, as I am, I'm great, you know, I'm doing really well, you know, I love myself, I accept myself, and, you know, how to kind of navigate a world of there's things I want to improve or I want to develop, I want to bring into my life, and to balance that alongside the, you know, it's okay to chill out sometimes. It's okay not to be, you know, chasing the next shiny, bright tool or object that's going to allegedly bring me more happiness. So I love that we've kind of come through this great adventure, really, through sport and talking about, you know, the challenges in that environment, how we bring courage from our youth to our adulthood, and practices we can bring in about that, and that we've come to this place now where it's about saying, you know, the courage to, you know, to accept yourself as you are, you know, and actually I'm reminded of the Serenity Prayer. Have you come across the Serenity Prayer?
I don't think so.
So the Serenity Prayer is itself a longer piece of written, like written work, but it's best known through the Alcoholics Anonymous community, because it's closely attached to the 12 Steps program, and as it's most commonly quoted, it says, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference." And, you know, that feels kind of like where we're at right now as we come to an end of this conversation, you know, grant me the serenity to kind of accept where I am, you know, be accepting of myself, and to have the courage to look into the things that, you know, I can't accept or that I want to change. And, you know, the wisdom to know which is which, which it really sounds like where you're at in your journey at the moment, Tom.
I think that's spot on. Yeah, it's you couldn't sum it up better. But Scott, I've really enjoyed the discussion, and thanks for having me and listening to my examples of courage in my life. It's something that obviously I'm working towards, and yeah, it's a conversation that I think hopefully, you know, has been enjoyable. But yeah, let's keep exploring and see where we end up, because it's exciting, and it's, yeah, I think.
Listen, from my side, just to say, Tom, thanks so much. You know, it's been so interesting to hear about courage and your experience of courage in your life. And what strikes me is it's very different to the other conversations I've had in such brilliant ways. And so, yeah, I agree. You know, the curiosity conversation ends now, but the conversation will continue. And I'm really looking forward to when we get to catch up again to talk about it.
Perfect. All right, Scott. Let's catch up soon. And, yeah, have a good one.
All the best, mate.
See ya. Bye.